Welcome to The Southern Bruja, a podcast dedicated to reviewing horror novels new and old, Latinx folklore, and a dash of all things Southern and weird. I'm your host, Melanie. On today's episode, I sit down for a conversation with author Megan Collins to discuss her latest bestseller, The Family Plot. So Megan, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself or anybody that's new to you and your writing?
Yeah, so I write psychological thrillers, psychological suspense, domestic suspense. I've been categorized in all three of those, and I think there's a lot of overlap there. And my first book is The Winter Sister that came out in 2019. Last year in 2020, I had Behind the Red Door, and then most recently in August this year was The Family Plot. And I usually tend to write about really messy, dysfunctional families that are all messed up in their very peculiar individual ways. And I'm really drawn to that, I think, just because it creates such rich backstories for characters. It gives a lot of strong, interesting, powerful emotional terrain to explore. And so that's kind of my books in a nutshell. And then outside of that, I was a creative writing teacher for 12 years. And now just recently, the last year or so, I've kind of made the leap into full-time writing, but I loved being a teacher too. I worked at an arts high school. So I was teaching teenagers writing and it was the best. And I'm also the managing editor of Three Elements Review, which is a literary journal that basically acts as a writing prompt for writers, in that every issue we give our contributors, our potential submitters, three elements, as the name of the journal says, that they have to include in their piece that they submit to us. So for example, in the issue we're accepting submissions for right now, our elements are frost, town square, and mercy. So anybody can write a story, a poem, an essay, and just include those three words or phrases in the example of town square. And it's just, it's an amazing job because it's like a completely volunteer thing. So I don't know that I call it a job, but it is a job. It's something that I do. but it's amazing because we come up with these terms, these elements, and then people just come back and do all these things with them that we never would have envisioned when thinking of them. So I love that I have that side too, that I get to be both on the editing side of things and with my writing of my own books, of course, on the writing side. So that's kind of a little bit about me.
So it sounds like you've always had a bit of an interest in definitely all things creative. But have you always wanted to write, mm-hmm. or was that kind of something that came out of you teaching, or how did that kind of develop?
Yeah, I've always wanted to write. I remember when I was 6 years old, I wrote a short story. My first short story, it was called The Bad Cats. And it was about some bad cats. And it was just like immediate. It was just like, I was so kind of spellbound by the way that I could take literally, my grandparents had given me these, it seemed like somebody had made them, just like these little journals, but they were just basically folded blank pieces of paper stapled together into these little booklets. So they were completely blank pages that then me and my little six-year-old brain and very small abilities created characters and drawings, which were terrible, and a story. And I was just so, in awe of that process that I once had this blank book and now it's a story. And so ever since then, I wanted to write. It was pretty much the only path I ever entertained for myself was being a writer, even though I'm sure for my parents, that was probably difficult because they probably would have liked me to have something practical too that I was striving for. But I will say that they never, they were always super supportive. And they, you know, when I said, I'm going to study creative writing in college, they were like, okay, yeah, you love to write. You should do that. And then when I'm like, I'm going to go to grad school for creative writing, they're like, okay, yeah, like do the thing that makes you happy. And I know actually from having taught a lot of creative writing students over the years that that's not always the case, because I know a lot of my former students especially the ones at the high school level, their parents would be like, okay, like you're doing this now, you're getting this out of your system sort of, and now you're going to go study biology and do something that you can definitely get a job with it. So, but for me, there was just never any other path. Like, it was just like, I have to be a writer. And I worked for a year in between college and grad school as a reporter at a local newspaper. So it was still writing, but I hated it because it was all like covering town meetings and nothing that felt creative. It always felt like very formulaic. And for some people, like that's really great and they love it, but it just wasn't the thing for me. And so that was the push to go to grad school. And then when I got out of grad school, or actually in grad school, I started teaching a class because that was sort of part of my program that I had to do that. And at that point I had been like, I can't teach. Like, that's not a thing I can do. Like, I'm terrified right now. But then the first class, I just loved it. So luckily I kind of lucked into finding something that would also allow me to make money while trying to be a writer. But yeah, it's so basically since I was 6 years old till now I'm 37 years old. I've always been writing, always wanted to write.
I love that you can hear the kind of like passion you have for the creative process and just kind of sharing that with others. And I think that really comes across in your books and the way you write. So let's talk about your books, especially The Family Plot. That is your newest novel. And it is a crazy ride of a book. And we'll get into that. But can you tell, for those who haven't had a chance to pick it up yet, can you tell us, our readers and listeners, a little bit more about what The Family Plot is about?
Yeah. So the very quick elevator pitch is that it's about a true crime obsessed family who gather to bury their patriarch. And when they dig up his grave in the family plot, they discover the remains of their long missing brother already in there. And kind of to expand on that a little bit, this is about a very unusual family named the Lighthouses. And the children are all adults now, they've all grown up, but they were raised in a very unusual way. They're all named after famous murder victims because their mother especially is, and their father was just kind of, he went along with it, is obsessed with true crime. And she homeschooled them with this curriculum that included, you know, all the regular subjects, but then also these true crime stories, to the point where she would do sort of these murder reenactments in front of them. And so they grew up very steeped in these very dark stories. And now they return home and they get thrust into sort of a true crime story themselves. And it's also extremely tragic because it's a family member that they did not know was murdered. They thought that he had run away for various reasons. And so now they're having to like recalibrate everything that they know about that. And so the narrator of the book is Dahlia, and she's named after the Black Dahlia. And she is the twin of the brother whose remains they found in the grave. And so now she's just realized that her twin, who she thought was always still out there, has been dead for 10 years. And so she's understandably upset, but the rest of her family is reacting to this in really strange ways. The mother, who, like I said, was no Susie Homemaker by any stretch of the imagination, suddenly can't get out of the kitchen because she's making cookies in a sort of manic, feverish way and just making and burning all these cookies when they've never seen her basically do anything in the kitchen in her life. And her sister, Tate, who she has this really popular Instagram account where she creates these crime scene dioramas of crimes that actually happened on the island where they grew up, where there was this serial killer, the Blackburn Killer. And now she's getting to work on a diorama of her brother's murder, which is very upsetting to Dahlia. And she's appalled and all of that. And then her older brother, Charlie, has decided that what he's going to do to deal with this is he's going to put on a family memorial murder museum, basically, and invite the whole island and show these people who have always looked at their family and thought that they were so strange and freaks basically for the way that they lived, that there's nothing to be afraid of with them. They're totally normal, except the way that he's showing that is putting on display all the things of their weird childhood and upbringing, like the murder reports they had to write in their homeschool curriculum, and the portraits of these murdered people that the sister had made. And so first of all, Dahlia's like, how is that showing anyone that we're normal? But she's just kind of appalled and disturbed by the different ways that her family is reacting to this. And so she thinks, okay, I'm going to let them do what they're doing, and I'm going to get to the bottom of what happened to my twin. And then the story just kind of spins off from there.
Yeah, Dahlia, she is a very interesting character, and probably for me anyway, the most understandable person. Like, she came out of this family as very as level-headed as you can imagine somebody could in that kind of upbringing. But it's interesting how you wrote all these characters, because I kind of viewed them each as kind of a study in grief and trauma and how people can react to that, and kind of, you know, some people get very creative and kind of zone in on something, even if it's disturbing to others, there's some kind of healing in art. And I felt like that was kind of Tate's character, and they all kind of took on these kind of aspects of grieving. And I just thought that was really brilliantly done. And then you really took that and tied that into this true crime fascination that seems to just be kind of taking over the country. So how did you kind of create that? What kind of research did you have to go through to kind of create this family plot?
So, what happened, like, the whole way that this story came to me is that it actually stemmed from the title, The Family Plot, because I had been trying to work on something different. It was also about a family, like my books always are. And I was like, I just need a title, like something that points to the family aspect of it. And so my husband threw out the first phrase he could think of with family in it and said, The Family Plot. And I was like, no, that doesn't work for this, but that's such a good title, because right away, like, you have the image of cemetery, graves, dead bodies, all great thriller fodder. And then also the double meaning of plot with scheming and secrets, and also the actual grave itself. So that was just kind of going through my head until one day, like, it sprang into my head that I got this idea of, you know, a family's coming together to bury one member, only to discover that another member who they didn't even know was dead is already buried there. And so once I had that, I was like, that's so weird and creepy, and I want to do that. So I started to think about what kind of family would be most interesting to put into a situation like that. And I'm someone who's very interested in true crime myself. I listen to all the podcasts, watch all the shows and things. So I think my brain sort of naturally went in that direction. And I started to think, what if I took that to the absolute extreme and showed an extreme obsession with true crime, and then had that be the family that is plopped into this situation? And how do they react once they're finally at the center of one of these crimes that, like, if it happened to somebody else, they'd be fascinated by it? So that was a really interesting question to me. And then I just, I mean, a lot of the research that I did was very kind of on the go, because I do know a lot of stories just from my own interest in it. I was able to draw from those, but then I would be writing and I'd need a reference to, like, a serial killer from the 70s or something. And then I'd just Google that and get something. So I also learned of a lot of victims and murderers who I hadn't heard of before. And I just really wanted to explore why it is that we're so drawn to this weird thing that's really, really dark and kind of exposing the darkest parts of humanity. And why is that something that we consume, like, with a bowl of popcorn, and that we can listen to for hours on end? And, you know, how does that serve us? Because it must in some way, like, otherwise we wouldn't be so interested. And then also on the flip side of that, how can that hurt us sometimes? And so that was kind of the question that I was trying to explore in this book.
Yeah, there's a section of the book, and I don't want to give too much away. But I mean, first of all, for people that haven't read it yet, there are just pages. I don't even know the amount of research you had to have done to include all of those crimes and do it in a respectful way. It's just fantastic. And I found myself stopping to Google some of the things that you included because there's things I'd never heard of. And of course, it's kind of tapped into that true crime interest that I think most people have. But there's a part in the book where you were talking a little bit about the kind of family coming together and opening up their lives to neighbors. And a neighbor says something like, "This is actually kind of boring. This isn't what I thought." And another character says, like, "This is our lives." And I thought that was really interesting how we kind of as a society can kind of segment the way we see things. We see this horrific thing, and then it turns into this like, oh, well, we're so used to that now. And it was just fascinating the way you wrote that. And I was just wondering, you know, when you were writing this and kind of looking at these crimes and kind of looking at humanity and how we handle the darker aspects of humanity, was there anything that surprised you when you were writing this?
Yeah, actually. So as someone who, like, I feel like I'm part of that true crime community because I'm a fan of those things. There's always this thing that gets said, especially in the My Favorite Murder podcast, which is a great place for true crime enthusiasts, where they say, you know, it's not about the murderers, it's about the victims. We're telling these stories in order to remember these people and to, you know, not just let them end with this terrible thing, but to remember that they were actual people and all of that. And like, I so wholeheartedly believe in that. And I think that that's a great aim. But as I was writing this, I kind of realized and then started to play with in various drafts that I don't know that that's possible. I don't know that it can never be about the murderers, because in the book, the mother, her whole thing is she has these what she calls honorings for famous murder victims, where they light these candles and they say this little thing. And it's always about like remembering the victims. So I tried to like use her as sort of the representing that view, but there's really no way to separate those things. If we're talking about a victim, it's because there's some killer or some criminal or something. And, you know, I also believe that we should remember the victims and all of that. But at the same time, like, I know so many facts about killers. Like, I know the ones who were dropped on their head as a kid. And there's that thing about a lot of them were and had like head injuries, and it might've manifested in this way. And so I think it's a great aim, but I wanted to then, once this was kind of coming to me, this realization that I don't think we really can divorce those two from each other. And I think that in watching and consuming true crime, we are giving life to the killers, and we are still giving them a space and still giving them a say. I wanted to play with that in the book and show how, you know, you can try all you want, but the absolute darkness of it and the root of that darkness, the cause, the person who started it, is a part of that person's story. And every time you tell that story, because you're not talking about, oh, this person wanted to be a florist when she grew up and blah, blah, blah. Like, a lot of times we just don't know those things, or we don't dig into that part. We're talking about she left the office at 5:38 p.m. and then the last person to see her. So it's always in the narrative of what happened to them at the end of their life. So that was really interesting for me to discover, both about myself and my own kind of consumption of true crime and just thinking about it in general. And so I really tried to play with that in the book a lot.
Yeah, so I know that this is kind of categorized as a thriller book, but I found a lot of elements of what I consider a really good horror novel to be in this book. One being everybody's afraid of something. And I think you hit on it a lot, is just being human. We're all afraid of, you know, our demises and kind of the legacy that we leave behind and wanting to be remembered. And I think part of that is the fascination with true crime and serial killers is, you know, these aren't, you hope never to be this story. And this book really shows kind of what happens after that story ends and the aftermath of that. And there's not a lot of that out there that does it well either, and really covers kind of the odd fascination with the details and the kind of the what's left behind when that's all said and done. So did you go out when you were writing this novel? Were you looking at including horror elements? There's so much that really just kind of teeters on thriller horror. And I was wondering what your process was for that.
Yeah, it was never like a conscious thing. And it was actually, it wasn't until Michelle Campbell, the author, who she blurbed the book, and she said this beautiful, like very kind, generous thing. She said it was a masterpiece of Gothic suspense and horror. And it wasn't until she said the word horror in that, that I was like, oh, is there horror there? And I'm like, well, we've got this really creepy mansion. We've got murderers galore. We've got this secluded island and this kind of feeling of dread and all those things. But so I think that was just an unconscious thing. But I kind of, when I talk about my process in writing this book, and as I was writing it, what I kept thinking was that I was going feral. And I don't mean like I was writing it so hard that I wouldn't like shower or eat or anything. I mean that I just let myself put everything that interests and fascinates me into it. And like, I had no limits, and everything that I wanted to be there could be there. So I love a creepy house. Creepy houses in it. I'm fascinated by serial killers. There's a serial killer in it. I love dark, rocky islands with a lot of atmosphere to them. That's in there too. I love miniature things. So there's these little dioramas in them. And I could go on and on about all the things that I kind of put in there just because it's something that interests me. But I don't know what it was like as I was writing. I was like, I hope these things all end up working together. But there was just something about each of them that was like calling to me as, yes, this is supposed to be a part of this story. And I just had to kind of trust that it would all come together, hopefully. Although I had a character I had to completely get rid of. There used to be this housekeeper character who was just super creepy, and you never knew what was going on with her. And my editor very rightfully was like, what is her purpose? And I was like, she's just creepy. And she's like, okay, we should probably get rid of her. She's not serving the story. And I'm like, I know. But yeah, so it was just about putting all those things that interest and fascinate me. And I have been like reading more horror the last few years. So I think maybe those things were just subconsciously there in my writing process.
Yeah, this book's great because it literally has something for every kind of reader. If you're into family drama, that's there. If you're into like this kind of character study and how people come out of traumatic situations and how they just kind of transform into the people that they're going to be in the future, that's here. I mean, there's so much. There's definitely a lot of creepy stuff. You want, there was a scene too with somebody with an axe. I don't want to say who, with the axe, just kind of constantly hitting a tree when they're feeling strong emotions. And for some reason, that image just kind of kept staying in the back of my head. And it was just really kind of insidiously creepy, I would say, where you're not, you know, at the time you're reading and you're like, yeah, okay. And then later when you're reading, you're like, that's really abnormal. And it won't, you know, it's just all those good, juicy elements of a creepy book were all there. And then there was the emotional elements of just this family and this trauma and tragedy that happens to them and them being the outcasts. And I think everybody can relate to that feeling at one point in their life where they're outcasted and they feel misunderstood. And there's just so much you can relate to. And that sounds strange to say about a book about serial killers and true crime, but really it's just the characters are brilliant. Would you ever revisit some of them in the future?
I've gotten that question before. And it hadn't struck me until somebody asked me that. But I did love creating this family so much. And it was a big challenge for me because in my two books prior to this, I always had a very small family unit. Like there would be a parent, like one parent who was the main parent in the book. And then the protagonist. And then, but this, you know, you have three siblings who are alive, one who's dead and whose memory is very much on the page. The father is dead from the very beginning, but he's still a big part of it. You have the mother. And so it was an interesting experience to create those family dynamics and the like specific frictions that each one's would have, so that when Charlie and Dahlia are interacting, it's going to be different than Dahlia and Tate, and then different than Charlie, Dahlia, and Tate all together. And that was really fun to do. And yeah, it was kind of like once I was done with it, I was like, oh, I've just figured out who these people are. And now I want to see them more. And I always kind of leave my books, like the mysteries are always tied up. The questions are always answered, but I do always leave them in, there's always something sort of ambiguous about it, in that, you know, I let you know where they're leaving off, but I don't necessarily know, the reader doesn't know what's going to happen to them in the future, or if they're going to be okay. Like I always put them, my goal is to get them to a path where they can probably be okay in the future. They have overcome the thing that they needed to overcome, and there's probably like therapy in the future. But yeah, so if the right story came to me to use these characters again, I think I would definitely be open to that. And if people were interested in reading that, I'm not sure if a story would come that would work with them again. But they're such a weird, bonkers family that it was just so much fun to play around with them all the time.
They are bonkers. Like I was reading this book on a particularly hard day of momming, and I was just feeling like I was doing everything wrong, you know. It was just one of those days where it's like, gosh, I'm really bad at this mom thing. And then I was reading this and I was like, it could be worse.
Actually, all of my books I think are good. I'm not a parent, but I think they're good, make you feel better about yourself as a parent books, because the parents always tend to be either like neglectful or just like in their own zone and completely missing the point on everything or whatever it is. So I know what you mean.
Yes. And I think in The Red Door as well, all of your characters are very human. They don't feel like they're just written on a page. Like you could see these things happening to these people and their reactions seem very authentic. So I would personally love to see you revisit these characters, because there's still so much I feel like you can grow with a lot of them and kind of see where this heads. And yeah, I just hope that future projects include them, but that's my own selfish wish list item.
I will keep that in mind. I mean, it definitely, the way it ends, they're sort of at a point where you know that all of their lives are going to go in a completely different direction than they've been before. So that does give the opportunity for things maybe in the future. I'll let you know if I think of something.
So speaking of future projects, do you have anything that you're working on currently that you can share with us?
Yeah, I'm working on what will be my fourth book. It should be out. It's going to be out early 2023. And it's called, right now, the title is Thicker Than Water, but publishing, you never know. They might change it at the last minute. And it's about a pair of really, really close sisters-in-law who their bond is tested for the first time when the man who connects them, which is one of their brother and the other's husband, becomes the prime suspect in this really high profile murder. And also he happens to be in a coma at the time because he got into a car accident. And that's how the police found evidence in his car that links him to this murder and makes them sure that he did it. And so the sisters-in-law are determined to clear his name before he gets out of this coma, hopefully he gets out of this coma, because otherwise he's going to be arrested. And so they work to uncover things. And as they do, they're on the same page, but then at some point they start kind of interpreting pieces of evidence differently. And then to the point where one of them is still absolutely certain that he's innocent and the other starts to think he might have done this. And then it keeps going from there.
Ooh, that sounds exciting.
Good. I'm still working on it. So it's good to hear if they say like, oh, that sounds good, instead of like, oh, okay.
No, that sounds so great. Yes, I'm excited to listen to it and read it. And the more you can share with us about it, the better. But I know that's a long way down the road. To change gears just a little bit before we go, we have someone in common who mentioned you have a lot of special talents, and one was picking the best cereal. So I have to ask, if you were matching a cereal with the family plot, what would you pick? Because I have my choice.
Oh, I guess Count Chocula, because I picture, I don't know, I don't eat Count Chocula, but I picture like Count Chocula himself in front of this big gothic creepy mansion, which is, there's no vampires in the book or Count Chocula's, but I feel like that would vibe together. What would you pick?
I'm gonna go with Fruit Loops, because that family, that family is just, they're super interesting, and there's so many people that are surprisingly likable despite their flaws. But they are a bunch of Fruit Loops, so I have to say that is just, they're so fun though. They're just, I mean, every time a new twist would happen, and there's so many twists, but every time something would happen, I would go, oh, like that, I didn't see that coming, but it makes sense. So I'm just like, really, I loved your book, and I'm so glad you came to talk with me today. Please come back, especially when you have your next book. But is there anything that you want to leave our listeners with today? Just kind of a last word before we sign off.
Yeah, I'd love to shout out an upcoming book that I'm really excited about, if that's okay. The author is Mandy McHugh, and it's going to be her debut. It's called Chloe Cates is Missing. And it comes out in January, so it's not too far away. And I would just like recommend blind pre-ordering it, because it is so riveting. It's just like, you start and it just carries you along the whole time, and you are desperate to turn the pages. There are also characters that I cannot wait to scream with about people. It's just like, I can't say why it's so, but it is. And, but it's basically a very, very short thing. It's about, this teenage, like she's 13, YouTube star who, and like kind of mommy blog star who, goes missing, and there's this, you know, this race to find her, and the detective who's involved, it kind of relates to another, to something very personal for her. And, it's just so good, and people are going
to
love it.
Perfect. So Chloe Cates, we have to buy Chloe Cates is Missing and the Family Plot, and we can all have a creepy read in. I think that sounds wonderful. Thank you so much, Megan, for being here today. You're awesome. Thank you.
You're awesome. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. To catch all the latest from me, you can follow me on Instagram at @the_southern_bruja and on Twitter @southern_bruja. Thanks again. We'll talk next time.